I wanted to do a series of interviews with white women 65 and older who had been a part of civil rights and anti-racist organizing. In large part, I wanted to do this because I remember growing up and hearing my mother talk about some of her experience in that space, and it was really important to me in terms of how I thought to move forward in the world. I don't think that we have an anti-racist world, and I think that we have a white supremacist world that requires all hands on deck all the time and constant learning from our history, from each other. I didn't want the stories of these women to go unheard. I've collected them in a series of interviews, and thank you so much for taking time to listen to them.
Hi, so I am speaking with Arlene Dunn and continuing the interview project. And I guess I just wanted to start. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Sure.
Yeah, and I guess I wanted to start with just sort of how you first got involved in the civil rights movement and what that work looked like for you.
Sure. Okay. Let me just say that my name when I was involved in the civil rights movement was Will Gorin.
Okay.
So just for people who might know that name and not know my name is Arlene Dunn, I was Arlene Will Gorin then.
Got it.
My first actual participation in the civil rights movement was in February of 1960. When students in the South were sitting in at the Woolworths lunch counters, and I was a college student at the time, and we demonstrated in front of the Woolworths in Harvard Square. I was going to school in the Boston area. So that was my very, very first demonstration. And I eventually met up with people in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was, in fact, formed by the students who were doing the lunch counter sit-ins, and this grew into a number of locations in the South, and in April they all gathered at Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina, and formed the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Well, I was just curious, and so what were some of your first impressions of them at the time?
Well, they impressed me as being, first of all, young, they were all very young and full of energy, and they were far and away more willing to take action and have more radical ideas than what I might refer to as the old standby civil rights organizations, the NAACP and CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, and SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
Yeah.
So not that those were not good organizations, but SNCC was very action-oriented and very had more, progressive and even radical notions of what was important and what and how much to demand of the power structure.
Yep.
They were willing to make much much bigger demands of the power structure.
Was that more appealing to you at the time, or?
I found that quite appealing and very, and I think it was, appealing to a lot of young college students at the time.
What do you think one of the most difficult aspects to being involved with that work was?
I think maybe sometimes the racial tension dealing with being white and it didn't come up often, but there were gaps in communication dealing with which I did not recognize really at the time. It was later that I realized that dealing with my own with racism and biases and prejudices that I had, that was just a part of me because of living in this society and growing up in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did your family support you being part of this work, or were there ever tensions there?
Oh yeah, there was tension there. My family, it was sort of interesting because on the face of it, my mother was, very strong in bringing me up and, regarding people as equal. And on the face of it, showing that belief, but really, the truth was subliminal that they did not really accept, people of color as their equal. I grew up Jewish I sometimes would hear my mother say things like, well, your people need your help. Why are you helping other people?
Yeah.
I think a lot of it was fear for my safety too. I would not be surprised that was the case as well. And there was certainly reason for that fear.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of violence perpetrated on these organizations especially when they were making what the power structure thought was too much too soon, always too much too soon. That was the message.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had an opportunity to read Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail.
Yes. It's actually the piece of his that I try to read every Martin Luther King Day because it's one of my favorites.
Right. And I think that's I'm glad to hear that because I think it should be read every year.
I wish I had read it in school. I don't think I was ever given that to read in school.
Right. I'm still pretty sure that the history of racism in this country is not taught in our schools. We're not taught well enough in our schools.
I was a military brat, so when I was in fifth and sixth grade, I went to Department of Defense schools. And the one thing that's kind of interesting about those schools is they really let teachers sort of pursue. There wasn't as much sort of control over every book. And I remember being in sixth grade, and my teacher had us reading Richard Wright. And I think back on it now, and I'm kind of amazed that happened, and I'm so grateful for her because it was very eye-opening for me.
Yeah.
But it's sort of weird. You wouldn't think, military kids in the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the same, hyper-control over all aspects of curriculum.
Right. That's I'm pretty impressed.
And, yeah. I think about Miss Valiant all the time.
Yeah. Grade that's pretty young to be reading Richard Wright.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, what do you think some of the most rewarding aspects to the work were? Because, part of why I'm doing this is so that people who are engaged now in challenging white supremacy and trying to fight for an anti-racist world can sort of learn from lessons that others who came before them have to give. So I guess just would love to hear what rewarding aspects you saw to doing this.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. On a personal note, I think it's it was so eye-opening to meet and engage with people from a really different culture, and I learned so much about other Americans. That there was this. There's so much to know. It's kind of amazing. Historically, I would say one of the most exciting moments my time working in the South was when the Mississippi Freedom Party brought their Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. I mean, it's interesting that they're calling it that. The Freedom Party today is so right wing. That Fannie Lou Hamer and led this delegation to the 1964 Democratic convention, and really changed history, I don't know about changed history, but you know, created a whole new history, I felt like I have felt over the many years that that I participated in changing America. That's something I'm quite proud of and feel really quite wonderful about and think that this is historically so important.
There are people like me who are very grateful for that.
I have had it's been really, really interesting over the years. I've had many younger. I mean, I'm right now they're more or less in the middle. They're middle.
Yeah, I'm 40, so.
Yeah. So I've had African American thank me for the work, my sacrifice for their ability to get the jobs that they have now. And it's been quite rewarding to hear that. And I'm personally touched by it. Usually I'm even getting a little tearful about it right now just thinking about it. So anyway, that always makes me feel like it was all quite worth it.
What was the biggest lesson you had to learn in that time kind of to do that work?
I really think one of the really important lessons was taking leadership from African Americans. That was pretty you grow up in a racist society, it takes some work to overcome those prejudices that linger and stay with you. And so I think it was so, so important to take leadership from black people and really believe that this was the absolute right thing to do. So that was really pretty exciting.
Do you think that's sort of a lesson that endures for people now? Because, I mean, we're seeing kind of, a rise in anti-black and white supremacist crimes and violence in the country.
Yeah, I think this is a lesson that hasn't been quite learned yet.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's particularly really quite disturbing that white and unfortunately even police officers of color who their defense for firing at black people is that they feared for their life, and this seems to be an acceptable rationale. And yet, if you think for just a few moments and wonder why a person holding a cell phone is a threat to them and think that that is a gun instead of that their prejudices about people of color just over that that's what's in charge of at the moment rather than any other, because a white person holding a phone and ranting or whatever, they would not pull the gun on.
Yeah, or even holding a gun.
Wow. I guess
as the final question I really wanted to ask, which I think is what people will have as a takeaway, is what advice would you give young people today and young white women in particular who want to engage in civil rights and anti-racist organizing?
Well, I think, read. Read our history. Study the real history of slavery. Try and really get an understanding of the impact on our economy today is so dependent on the contributions, the free labor that our economy received with several hundred years of people being enslaved in this country. And try to understand white privilege. And to look inside yourself to realize and there's Peggy McIntosh, I think, I'm trying to remember.
Oh yeah, the invisible knapsack.
Okay. That she came to that understanding of white privilege by understanding how she was considered second class because she was a woman. And listed all of those things especially for white women. If you think about all of the things that you feel as a woman being denigrated in this society and not being regarded as equal, and think about that for a moment and transfer it to people of color and how they are regarded and what kind of privilege white people receive just for being white. I think is really, and just look around you, show
the empathy and narrative around the opioid epidemic versus the crack epidemic is
right. Correct.
One really stark example. In my work, I work in the child welfare and juvenile justice space, and with some of the very good reforms, like the Family First Act, the only reason they sort of seem to have had momentum behind them is, we need to think about foster care reform because the opioid crisis is leading to more white children being placed in the foster system, we reform the system. So, I think we still have a very far way to go, and that's why I really appreciate that. That's part of why I wanted to try to bring these stories together, because my fear is that there are so many people who have things to say and advice and wisdom to give, and I just wanted to try to create a place where people could come and hear some of those stories.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Thank you so much for.
Say one other thing about how it was actually when I was in high school that I first had any consciousness of race even being an issue in this country, so I was a junior in high school when the Little Rock Nine tried to integrate Central High School. And so here I was, and this is like the beginning of my, I don't know if I certainly did not have a full sense of my white privilege, but, here I was just going to school every day and just taking that opportunity for granted, just not thinking at all about what privilege I had in getting the best education I could get. I was in a public high school, but it was a college prep high school in Boston. And here I'm seeing these images on television of girls looking really just like me, but for the color of their skin. They dressed like me. They carried their books like me. They did everything. They looked serious. They were, looked like serious students to me, and they were being spat on and called every name in the book, and being prevented by the National Guard in Little Rock from going to school. This image came to me when I was a junior, and that image has stuck with me all these years, and really was my first even recognition that there was a race problem in this country. Anyway, okay.
Well, thank you so much, Arlene. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me.
And thanks for doing this.
And I will be in touch when I get the site ready to go live. So thank you so much.
We'll try and I'll help you get it, posted around.
Thank you. And thank you for your work.
Well, thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.